This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, July 8th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for the Wall Street Journal. Unlike the rest of China, people in Hong Kong have had practically unfettered access to the internet. But a new national security law went into effect there earlier this week, and it requires authorities to exercise more control over online speech. That law is putting the world's biggest tech companies in a tough spot as they decide how to respond. Our reporter Nuli Purnell will join us to explain after these headlines. The augmented reality headset maker, Magic Leap, is getting a new CEO, Peggy Johnson. She's the former head of business development at Microsoft. Johnson is the one who led Microsoft's acquisitions of companies like LinkedIn and GitHub, and she oversaw the company's corporate venture capital fund as well. Johnson will be taking over at Magic Leap on August 1st, and she'll be working to help the company continue its shift in focus from the consumer market to more enterprise customers. And there's a new Silicon Valley player in real estate. It's called Juno Residential. The company launched yesterday with the aim of mass-producing apartment buildings. Our reporter Conrad Putzier has more.
To explain what Juno is doing, you really have to understand the construction industry. And it's a very, very strange industry because the way construction essentially works is that every single real estate development is treated like a startup. You're a developer, you pick a development site, and then you hire an architect, you hire a contractor, and you kind of buy materials, and everything is done from scratch. And once you're done with the real estate development and you move on to your next project, you start all over again. So what Juno is essentially saying is this whole approach, treating each real estate development like something that starts completely from scratch, is inefficient. So what they're trying to do is to say, why don't we treat real estate development more like any other industry, like making a car or making an iPhone, where instead of making everything from scratch, custom, you essentially mass produce this item, and that way it becomes way more efficient because you can buy everything in bulk and you have all these processes in place and everything just becomes a lot faster.
Conrad says Juno is far from the only tech startup that's getting into construction and housing. Lots of companies have been looking for ways to counter the lack of affordable housing in California and make a little money along the way.
It's definitely a trend that Silicon Valley is getting really, really interested in the housing crisis and is getting super interested in real estate development. And it's obvious why, right? Because if you're in Silicon Valley, you have to pay your employees a ton of money just so they can afford an apartment in San Francisco. So there is definitely an interest in Silicon Valley there. But obviously, in the end, this is just a way to make money. And I think what you're seeing here is that Silicon Valley sees housing as something where there's a huge demand. They see this as an industry that basically doesn't work the way it should. And they think, you know, this is something where we can make a lot of money if we do it better. And of course, it's an added bonus that you can actually do something good for the country as a whole if you actually manage to build more affordable housing.
After the break, how a new national security law in Hong Kong is impacting tech. That's next. China has imposed a new national security law on Hong Kong. It's one that requires authorities there to closely supervise and regulate the internet. And now the biggest tech companies have found themselves caught between violating internet freedoms and butting heads with Beijing. Our reporter Nuli Purnell has been looking into this, and he joins us now from Hong Kong to explain. Thanks for being here, Nuli.
No problem. Glad I could join you.
So I want to start with a bit of a crash course. Can we just remind listeners of the relationship between Hong Kong and China before this law was passed?
Sure. Well, Hong Kong has long been a city right on China's doorstep that China says abides by its one country, two systems law. And so that effectively means that it is a city that is part of China, but that operates under a different set of rules. So effectively, the use of the internet in Hong Kong and in China is night and day. So in China, people on the mainland have to deal with heavy restrictions on what's available to them, what apps they can use, what websites they can visit. The internet is heavily censored. They have to use VPNs or virtual private networks and able to get around some of those restrictions. Whereas here in Hong Kong, the internet is much more like it is in the U.S. It's essentially unfettered and it's unrecognizable from how the internet works in other countries.
Okay, so then this new law from China goes into effect. Where did it come from and what kind of impact does this have?
Well, China implemented this national security law, which had been expected for weeks or months now. And they say it's designed to restore order in Hong Kong and that they have every legal right to do it. And when some elements of the rule became clear, we saw provisions for companies operating here, tech companies or internet companies, that said that they needed to increase their supervision of some of these platforms. And they might have to turn over, if local authorities ask for it, details related to their users. So depending on the platform, it could be the IP address that they've used or when they last used the service, or potentially more details that they might have on them.
Got it. So I'd imagine a lot of these tech companies might be pretty hesitant to share that kind of information with the government. So how have they been reacting?
Right. Well, it began over the weekend when Telegram, which is a messaging service based in Dubai that's quite popular with protesters and other people here, made a statement that they were stopping reviewing requests that they might get from the government to give them data on users. But Telegram is not exactly a household name. So it was big news Monday when we asked WhatsApp about Telegram's announcement. And frankly, to my surprise, because many times when you ask these big, powerful tech companies anything, at least through their PR people, they don't have much to say. WhatsApp came back and said, actually, we too are pausing our review of any requests we might get like that. So that's immediately news because we were the first to report this. It hadn't been known that WhatsApp was taking this step, and quite a step that they must have calculated would have been big news. We went back to Facebook, which is, of course, their parent company, but there's no guarantee they're going to be on the same page. And they said the same thing. And then we went to Twitter and Google, and eventually they also concurred. They all said, we are stopping, at least for the time being, processing these requests because of the national security law. And some of them went so far as to actually say, we're doing due diligence on humanitarian grounds, and we believe that our users should have the ability to express their political opinions.
I just want to dial in here. What are these companies' specific concerns? What are they afraid might happen if they turn over user data?
Well, it's first important to note that in any country that these companies operate in, they have to abide by local laws. So that's in the US, that's in Singapore, that's in Vietnam, that's in Saudi Arabia. They have rules they have to follow. And those rules say that if varying by country, if certain content is posted, it has to be taken down or police can ask for details on users. This is common in many countries. What's different here is that the services have been available for a long time. They're avidly used by people, much as the way they're used in the US to express opinions for all manner of political speech. And so the companies seem to me to be concerned that the legal ground is shifting so quickly that, and it's unclear to them how this law could be put into effect, how this law could be used. So for example, could Twitter, which allows users to post material by anonymous people, could the police come to Twitter and say, we want to know exactly who all these people are who have been supporting the protests over the last year? And that would be, I'm sure, for Twitter, a very uncomfortable situation to be in, for example.
We mentioned this distinction before, but why are companies pulling out of Hong Kong but not China? With TikTok, for instance, they're owned by a Chinese company, ByteDance, and they've said they'll be leaving Hong Kong as a market altogether. So what's that about?
Yeah, it's an interesting calculus. So it depends on each company. So for example, for the Silicon Valley companies like Google and Twitter and Facebook, their services don't exist in the same ways, in some cases not at all, in some ways in limited or various manner in the mainland. And so someone might say, well, why wouldn't they take a stand? What do they have to lose? So that's one thing that they have to think about. You know, I think part of it is the global game of perception. You know, they're under fire in the US from both people on the left and right and in the middle for how they're dealing with content and political figures on their platform. They may have calculated that not only do they want to do right by their users here in terms of their principles, but also it doesn't hurt their image to be seen to be standing up to Beijing's increasing power. That's one thing. TikTok is an interesting case. Obviously, they are a Chinese company. So here you have a Chinese company in Hong Kong saying, because of these Chinese rules, this has changed things, and we're going to actually not just stop reviewing requests for usership, we're actually going to leave. It's unclear, you know, what has motivated that. Could be that, you know, as we've reported in some of our other stories in months past, they very much want to be seen not as a Chinese company, but as a global tech company. And they could be calculating that, well, if the Silicon Valley titans are making this stand, we should do it too.
So TikTok is kind of its own case. Let's shift a little bit. I want to talk about the long-term impacts of all of these moves on Hong Kong. Hong Kong has been seen as a center of international business. You mentioned the kind of uncomfortable position that companies like Twitter are now finding themselves in. Could that discomfort translate to a long-term impact on Hong Kong's status as that global hub?
It's been an issue that we've been reporting out over the weeks. Indeed, Hong Kong is an Asian financial capital. It's a place where people and goods and money can come in and out of the country quickly and easily. There has been rule of law. There has been a good and easy to comprehend legal system. It's a very easy place for businesses to operate, for foreigners to live, for people to come and go and get visas from. And so, yes, the imposition of this rule, even leading up to its actual imposition, has caused all kinds of company from all different sectors to contemplate, well, we want to be in this place. We've wanted to be in this place due to our proximity to China and its ability, the logistical abilities that make it a good place to live and work. And so if Beijing is moving quickly and implementing this rule that's vague and that we're unsure how they're going to enact and move on, what does that mean for our businesses? So it's a very real question for all kinds of businesses in all kinds of sectors.
How have people in Hong Kong been reacting to all of this? The government and the people?
I think you sense from a lot of people uncertainty and fear about what this all means. You know, I'm just a foreigner here. I'm American, and this is not my home. And so you can imagine how people who have lived here and grown up with their conception of what their home is supposed to be like and what the future is going to look like. You can imagine how they might feel if that's changing rapidly. Some people are welcoming these changes in this law because they don't like the protests and the chaos, and they would just rather see it go away, no matter what that means. We've seen people going out and deleting social media posts because they're afraid that material they might have posted before that was legal at the time could now be illegal under the new rules. A lot of self-censorship and fear. The rules are a little bit difficult to understand, and it all depends on how they're going to be implemented and enforced. And the government is slowly providing clarity on certain issues, but there's new developments every day. And so people are, I think, probably a lot of people felt buffeted by all these changes.
And what about the government? Have they said anything specific about the companies that have been pulling out of the region?
No, they haven't. And they have been asked more recently about some of these concerns that the tech companies have elucidated, and they haven't commented on. Their general line among many leaders has just been that the rule is designed to increase national security, and it's not going to be used capriciously. I don't think that's a very satisfying answer for a lot of people, but that's what they're saying.
All right. Our reporter, Nuli Purnell, thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And that was your tech news briefing. We've got more tech stories on WSJ.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.